Welcome to Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise podcast number 109 on August 19th, 2015. Changing the world, one ass at a time. Well, the first thing I have for you is actually a comment from podcast 103. And if you'll recall, 103 was the beginning of the male shame discussion. There was more in 105 and since then, but the whole discussion actually started because there was a young lady who wrote in and said that she and her boyfriend lost their anal virginity to each other, and they had insanely hot anal sex, and now he's scared of being called gay, and with the pegging and everything. So I believe what I mentioned at that time was whether his friends or he might be homophobic, and someone triggered off of that word and said, no, it's not necessarily homophobic. And then the whole discussion of shame began in terms of how guys treat each other around this. So I did get a comment left on my blog post, and it says, great podcast as usual regarding the dilemma that's straight guys have with any sort of anal play, I'd like to refer them to the following link. Now, this is a link that I actually used a couple of podcasts ago, but it deserves to be reposted. It's Dan Savage, and it's Dan Savage on straight men, and he is talking about why he thinks straight men are somewhat miserable sexually, and it has a lot to do with all everything that we've been talking about. So I really encourage you to go to the Linkorama and check that out, because it definitely is related. And then this commenter goes on to tell me some other things. Also, about health issues and prostate massage and pegging, another health issue that may be helped with pegging that you could add to your list is chronic pelvic pain syndrome. I've thankfully only had small bouts, not chronic, with this, but some of the short and very irregular episodes have been anywhere from mild, annoying pain to extremely sharp, bring-me-to-my-knees pain. Myself and a few others in the Aneros forums have found that somewhat fairly regular stretching the anal sphincters via a fairly wide dildo, parentheses, mine is 1 5/8 inch diameter, has helped with this. Others have also experimented with one of the two TheraWand models that are designed for therapy of this sort, but I could totally see a regular pegging practice helping with this. I love my Aneros practice, but by design, it encourages the muscles to get stronger and tighter, which seems to be the opposite of what helps me not have the occasional pelvic pain. And in addition, solo dildoing and pegging has allowed me to have more success with achieving multiple non-ejaculatory orgasms via my Aneros practice, as I suspect that pelvic tension in general seems to work against me in that regard. And then he lists some relevant links, and there are 4 different articles or discussions that, well, a little bit of both. There are 3 discussions in the Aneros forum, and one is a book called A Headache in the Pelvis. There we go. So I'm going to post all these in the Linkorama for you guys to see. I have long talked about what an amazing place the Aneros forums are, and this is exactly the reason why, is because when you come up against something like this with the chronic pelvic pain syndrome, you have a bunch of guys there ready to talk about it because they're already acquainted with that area in your body and that sort of thing. And if you wonder what the Aneros practice is, go there and check that out with them. There's a whole method and theory and kind of a tantric sort of an experience with the Aneros that a lot of people aren't aware of. A lot of people think it's just a toy that you put in there and have a good time with, but it can be a meditative experience that allows your body really to open up and experience some amazing things. So I'm going to put those links in the Linkorama. Check them out. And I really appreciate you writing in with this information, because that is one topic that I haven't really covered very much in all of my podcasts, is the chronic pelvic pain syndrome. I do recall a friend of mine who was feeling quite anxious and really tense and not at all happy. I can remember him taking his Enjoy Pure Wand, and basically using that to massage his prostate and to have an amazing orgasm. And he said the amount of reduction in his anxiety was astonishing. He seemed to think it was more than just a regular orgasm, because, I mean, okay, we all have an orgasm and we feel better, but he said the prostate massage really seems to help quite a bit with just basic anxiety and tension. So there you have it. Health benefits of prostate play. Woohoo! Okay, the next thing I want to talk to you guys about is just a totally awesome thing. But to lead into this, what I want to do is tell you a little bit of a story. Both of these topics that I'm going to talk about have to do with Texas, interestingly enough. You will recall that several podcasts ago, I was talking about being in Austin, Texas, when the marriage equality decision came down from the Supreme Court. And I do believe that I referred to Austin as a lovely island of progressive liberalism or something like that, surrounded by the rest of Texas, which I labeled bizarre wackos. And a man took issue with that and wrote me a very long and interesting letter with a lot of good points. And he basically said, okay, this is why I'm dropping your podcast, because he pointed to that name calling. And I totally cop to that. I really do. Name calling is never a good thing. Name calling is nothing but divisive. Sometimes I let my frustration with the views of others kick me over into the territory of not thinking a lot before I speak. And on this podcast, I speak a lot. So did I do name calling? I did. I called the rest of Texas bizarre wackos. I lumped you all into one big category just because the vast majority of you have political views about society that differ from my own. And I called you bizarre wackos, which is not nice. It's not fair. And I do apologize. He wrote a lot of things in that letter. It was a very long email, and it touched on a lot of the ways that conservatives are different than liberals. And he made a lot of good points. But the thing that impressed me the most was the last two paragraphs, which is what I am going to read you. I'm not fishing for an apology. I don't think that you said that with the intention of upsetting anyone. What I would ask is something far more profound, that you reconsider your casual dismissal of people whose moral foundations differ from yours. There are certainly many intolerant conservatives who will attack you for what you do. There are also more moderate conservatives who will disapprove but grant you your right to conduct your life however you want. Still others will find no contradiction between what you do and their own conservatism. When you are attacked, by all means, hit back. But please try to do so without disrespecting whole swaths of people who just happen to reside on the same side of the political spectrum. If nothing else, gently remind the angry Christian that Jesus told us to love our enemies. I honestly cannot think of a message more challenging and profound than that. I appreciate the reality check. I can't exactly talk directly to the guy who wrote in because he's not going to hear the podcast anymore. And for that, I'm sorry. I do regret name calling. It's never a pretty thing. So thank you for the reminder. And I hope you have gone off to find another interesting podcast that doesn't offend you. Okay, so that is one part of Texas, the story, right? And here's another part. This is the amazing part. This is a man that I have been conversing with via all kinds of different places all over the internet for some years now. He's been following my podcast and my blog and things. And here's what he wrote. The Houston Pegging Club held its first munch on Tuesday at a location in Midtown. We had a private room and attracted 41 people. In attendance were 20 men, 19 women, and 2 transgenders. The conversation was incredible, and everyone opened up to share. It is truly amazing that so many women are interested in this kink. Our next munch will be a show and tell where we bring out harnesses and toys. Your podcast was mentioned several times, and apparently you have several listeners among us. And I wrote him back and said, sweet, do you mind if I mention this information on the next podcast? Nice attendance. And he said, please do. We are trying to make others aware of what we are building. So in between the time when I had this conversation with him, and now when I sit down to record the podcast, I got another message. And here's what it said. The second munch of the Houston Pegging Club was the most successful munch ever. Almost 50 people attended. The mix was very close to 50-50 men and women. We had everything from raw newbies curious about pegging to some extremely experienced players. The number of women willing to share their toys and talk about their experiences was just overwhelming. And he went on to talk about how they're actually planning a party, a private party, a private pegging party. So this almost sounds fictional, doesn't it, everybody? See, these things can happen. And I sat down long, I sat and thought long and hard about why this works so well. It could be that the man who set it up and arranged it worked really, really hard to get as many people there as possible. And I know how this works, having, you know, classes and different things like that, that the time that you put in behind the scenes trying to get people aware of your event, trying to get them to attend, reminding them to attend, and all these different things is a fair amount of time. And especially if you're going off of a platform like FetLife.com, there are lots of different places to reach out to people, and it just takes time to do it all. So I'm suspecting he did some of that, and perhaps he had assistance from other people as well. But the really interesting part to me was the gender split. That part fascinates me, because how long have we talked about how there's not enough women who are interested in this, there's not enough women who want to do this, so many guys who do, so few women who don't, and probably if you had asked a bunch of people who are interested in pegging, even people who do pegging, what kind of gender split percentages do you think there will be at this first munch, at this first meeting of people who are interested in pegging? I probably would have predicted 75% men. So I'm thrilled that so many women attended, first of all. But I'm also thrilled that a bunch of men attended. I think that it's a situation where they were meeting, you know, munches are always low key and low pressure because they're in public places. Usually they're in restaurants with a private room. So that gives you a degree of safety in terms of nothing's going to be expected of you. It's not a private party where you're expected to take your clothes off or become sexual, or where other people might become sexual in front of you. And ideally, nobody's putting pressure on you because it's a public venue. People look out for each other. And there's a certain amount of ease that comes with that, or at least can come with it. So it sounds like this is part of what made it successful. I'm also thrilled that so many guys were there opening up and sharing about what it was like. Especially after all of this that we've talked about with the shaming of each other. It really touched me to hear that a bunch of men got together and talked. Now, also, I would assume that guys coming know that other guys coming and you're all interested in pegging, so it's more safe. You're not going to shame each other. That'd be idiotic. Can't be calling names. Okay. That would not be in your best interest to shame someone for something that you were into as well. Of course, that's not going to happen. So that creates such a freedom. When you're all into the same thing, you're not going to shame each other. That allows people to open up and share. So that's brilliant. In fact, sir, this is such a good idea that I think I'm going to do it here in California. And I really encourage all you people out there who are thinking about, maybe I could do this where I live. I looked up to see how many people Houston has. And Houston has a crapload of people. It's a very, very big city. So I thought that when I put the club that I'd like to do together, I'm going to kick it down further down the coast towards Los Angeles to give the people down there a chance to come and attend if they'd like. So yeah, that's on the back burner. I'll probably get to it in a little while, but It does require footwork, which I'm sure this man had to do. You need to find a restaurant that's okay with kink-friendly conversation. The servers need to be okay with it. The room does need to be private enough to have private conversation, and ideally private enough to where you can bring your toys and show them. You know, props are okay. So I'll be doing the research on that in the next month or two and see if I can put something like that together, because what better place to come and talk about it with comfort and ease and know that you're not going to be judged and you can get all kinds of information and everything than to have a munch that is basically structured around the whole pegging thing. So I'm not sure if I'm actually the type of person who would then take it to having a private pegging party like this guy is doing. And I admire that, but it's just kind of not my style. So perhaps other people in the munch might want to. In fact, I'm sure that there will be people who do want to. Anyway, it was very inspiring for me to hear this. And I'm just thrilled for you guys in Texas, in Houston. This is awesome. And even though I don't plan on having a private pegging party myself, I certainly want to hear how yours went. So make sure you let me know after the party. I think it's in September sometime, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, let's see. What else is happening here? Oh, so a few podcasts ago, I talked an awful lot about the PSA test and prostate cancer and prostatectomies and that kind of stuff. And I got a number of responses that I want to add to the base of knowledge. I'm just going to read the responses as is. I'm not a medical professional, so I really can't judge what's what in terms of giving you a final sort of this is how it is. I dove down the rabbit hole. I gave you as much information as I could. And now I'm going to read a few things to you from people who have different points of view. This next letter, there are two letters that I received from this man. One on July 9th and one on August 9th. So here's the first one. The comments and research done regarding PSA testing and potential surgical complications is well done and pretty thorough. Properly, you did not offer clinical interpretations nor give therapeutic recommendations. I listened to the segment 3 times. Indeed, there is lots of information out there. I disagree with the recommendations of the panel regarding screening. I disagree that prostates are being, quote, ripped out, end quote, based on a PSA screening. The Gleason score is determined by microscopic exam of tissue done by pathologists and urologists, very experienced in the interpretation of the microscopic characteristics. A Gleason 7 may be 4 plus 3 or a 3 plus 4. The 3 plus 4 is considered less threatening. It's quite detailed and complicated, and in my opinion carries value regarding prognosis and tumor virulence. You did not mention the role of the DRE, digital rectal exam. A DRE combined with PSA testing is, in my opinion, the most effective clinical manner of following one's prostate and evaluating potential presence of neoplastic lesions versus benign prostatic hypertrophy, not hyperplasia. This clinical course allows a urologist to follow properly a man's prostate health. Here's my perspective. I am a 67-year-old physician with a family history of a father who died with prostate cancer. I am not a urologist. I have had PSA done yearly and now semi-annually as well as a digital rectal exam by the same urologist, and that's all in caps, by the same urologist, for 20 years. My PSA is 1.05 these days. My urologist says my prostate is the size of a 20-year-old. Yippee. If you look up PSA rate of change, you will get a better understanding of the values for the test. Prospective care by a credible urologist in this manner is what your writer should seek. A single PSA and single digital rectal exam should never, and I doubt it does, lead to unnecessary surgery. I endorse mammography for my wife and all women. I endorse periodic colonoscopy for cancer screening and participate. I wish there were an effective screening for ovarian cancer, the worst cancer women face due to its insidious, silent onset. Finally, thank you for your quest to change one ass at a time. Anal play, yeah, baby, and pegging, parentheses, hoping soon, have added spice to my marriage. She's not there yet, and as you teach, slowly wins the quest. and she's great with her own digital rectal exam, the silk medium and large, oh yeah, and now we have a pure wand. For fun, begin to assess the shape, size, and presence of nodules in the prostates you may have the opportunity to examine before you fuck his brains out. Best wishes and happy pegging. Okay, now here is the next letter from this guy. This was sent in true concern that all the guys out there that listen have at least one opinion that another guy with a 20-year view has pursued given one's family history. Good info as well for their brides. For what it's worth, my semi-annual check was 2 weeks ago. My PSA is 1.17 and digital rectal exam unchanged, unremarkable. I have no symptoms and have peace of mind. I discussed this with my urologist. The panel you cited, quote, markets this evidence-based medicine to family physicians and internists. I have not met nor worked with any urologists that speak with disdain or dismissiveness of PSE, digital rectal exam, and rate of change. I'm wondering how many on the panel have declined a digital rectal exam, even though it is a standard part of a routine physical exam. One of the oncology urologists with whom I worked has noted that a low PSA into one's later years, parentheses, I am 67, portends less aggressive disease if and when it occurs. There is an academic paper that reflects this. Trend, history, prospective care is key. Once again, may I say that your research down the rabbit hole was exhaustive and complete. I hope I've added another point to consider. I will offer that if a guy is a non-smoker and exercises, then heart and vascular disease as well as lung cancer and lung disease, which are the first and second guy killers, are non-issues. Watch your PSA, have a digital rectal exam and other cancer screening exams, have lots of sex, and try not to get killed doing stupid guy stuff because one probably will be old. And then the last thing he says is, oh, pure wand, mighty fine. So the one thing I noticed in the second letter here is that you, sir, say, I'm wondering how many on the panel have declined a digital rectal exam. I don't recall. I definitely know that I didn't mention the digital rectal exam, and that is a big part of it. I don't recall mentioning that at all. Specifically, I was fixated, clearly, on the PSA test. So I don't know how many on the panel may have declined a PSA test, but I would guess that none of them declined a digital rectal exam because that is not what that panel was all about. It was strictly the PSA, not the DRE. But I get it. PSA, DRE, rate of change, that kind of thing. I would like to be able to understand the Gleason test better. It's hard for me to just throw my hands up in the air and say, well, these things are complicated and these guys know better than I do and they're microscopic, blah, 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 and trust that, especially when the panel said, you know, not a good test. So the panel did not say the Gleason test was not good. It said the PSA test was not good. The Gleason test, when I researched it, didn't seem to be as effective as it could be. It seemed to be like the PSA test. Anyway, you all got that from my PSA stuff, but I wanted to read this because this is someone else's point of view, and it's certainly valid, and you all out there listening need to listen to this addition to the base of knowledge here on the podcast and make your own decisions. So, and I have one more. I have one more person that wrote in. And thank you, sir, for writing in and telling us all this information. I do appreciate you adding to the base of knowledge. It really helps. Okay, here's the next one. First of all, thank you for all you do in promoting pegging and ass play. Your latest podcast hit particularly close to home. It was just last May that I commemorated 10 years as a prostate cancer survivor. If I had the information that you presented in podcast 104, I'm sure I would have been better prepared to make decisions and challenge my caregivers. One of the best things prostate cancer patients can do is to also talk to other men who have dealt with prostate cancer and its various treatment modalities. If you indulge me, I'd like to share my story. I had been getting PSA screening since my early 40s. The reason given by my urologist is because my father had prostate cancer in his 50s. I'm still unsure of how much genetics really plays into prostate cancer. I'd also had a couple of bouts of prostatitis. Yes, I wish I knew about the benefits of prostate massage long ago. When I was 48, I had another incident of prostatitis that turned into an infection. Later that same month, I had an appointment with my urologist and another PSA screening. Because of the earlier infection, I wasn't too surprised that my PSA levels were elevated, 8.43. This necessitated a biopsy that revealed a small cluster of adenocarcinoma, malignant neoplasm cells, in one quarter of the prostate. My Gleason score was 6. I went into research mode right away. I was lucky in that I worked in healthcare and had access to a number of physicians and other resources. I talked with surgeons and radiation oncologists. My supervisor, a director of medical research, told me about a 3D robotic procedure, and then he has a link to it, which I'll make sure to put in the linkorama. When I talked to my primary care physician, who was a trusted friend, he told me that if it were him at the age of 48, he would get it treated. The only other option I was told about was watchful waiting. I had the procedure 1 week before my 49th birthday. I was never afraid of the cancer. Because it was caught early, I was confident that I could be cured. It was the side effects of treatment that worried me most. And yes, I did and do have side effects from my treatment. I had 4 months of incontinence and close to 4 years of impotency. I still have the occasional stress incontinence, not unlike for women who have given birth, and still have pain when I orgasm. I'm told the pain is a result of scarring, both from the prostatectomy and residual hernia operations when I was an infant. Thanks to an amazing urology nurse, now I can achieve and sustain an erection for intercourse. I have also seen a physical therapist that specializes in pelvic floor therapy. I highly recommend this for anyone who has had surgery in and around the genitals and pelvic floor. Another reason I was lucky is that I didn't require any follow-up radiation or chemotherapy. The surgery took care of it, and I continue to have undetectable PSA readings to this day. Again, had I been armed with the information you presented in your podcast, I probably would have been much more questioning in my research. But men do die of prostate cancer. Frank Zappa, Michael Landon, Johnny Ramone, Dan Fogelberg, Bill Bixby, to name some of the more famous victims. For those like myself, who are prostate cancer survivors, I would like to offer another resource. PCAI, which is an online discussion and support group for matters surrounding intimacy. And I think, yeah, PCAI. I'm not sure what that acronym stands for. Let me check. Aha. So that acronym basically means prostate cancer and intimacy. So he said it's an online discussion and support group for matters surrounding intimacy for those who have prostate cancer. I would also suggest, actually, that there are groups who talk about this on the Aneros Forum because, you know, Aneros Forums have kind of turned into everything prostate. So there are definitely men there talking about prostate cancer, treatment for it, and what kind of intimacy they've been able to find, too. So there's two resources for anyone listening, and I will put all of those links on the linkorama. Thank you so much for writing in, sir, and telling your story and adding it to our knowledge base. I appreciate it. Ah, and I see that the other link that you gave me, I clicked on that and checked it out, and it tells a lot more about the 3D robotic procedure. And this is a procedure that is supposed to have a whole lot less complications because I would assume it's very exacting because it is 3D and robotic, and it would end up with fewer complications in terms of incontinence and the things that can potentially go wrong. I think I may have mentioned I had a friend who had surgery twice for benign prostatic hyperplasia, and they basically take a laser and go in there and carve around their ureter tube, and they must have nicked the nerve that basically told him when he needed to go pee. And so he just had to kind of guess and just keep doing it a bunch just in case. And that was his complication. So surgery in that area is really kind of wild and intense. And really like the suggestion of anybody who has had surgery in that part of their body to have some therapy done in terms of the pelvic floor muscles. And interestingly enough, that was one of the first things that we talked about with the one of the first letters on this podcast. The Enjoy Pure Wand is also really good for that as well. So there you have it. Anybody else who has any stories, please do write in, and thank you, sir, for sharing your story with us. Okay, this is a comment that was left on my Pegging 101 site on the article, "He's Not Gay." "My husband is super into pegging. I, on the other hand, am repulsed by the idea. I hate that I am. I couldn't tell you why. It is not a homophobia thing. I love me some gays, but seeing a man fucked in the ass is seriously repulsive to me, and I hate that about myself. We have done it about a dozen times, and every time he enjoys it and gets off, but when he asks for it, my heart sinks and I experience anxiety. I feel so terrible because he knows how much I hate it, and he feels bad for asking me, which isn't fair to him. What can I do?" Oh boy. Well, first of all, I don't think that any partner, if they knew that you were repulsed by an act, would want you to keep doing it. Even no matter how much they loved it, you know, the idea that you want your partner to do something that literally repulses them just so you can get pleasure, no, that's not a good thing. So, well, I don't know, which way do you go? Do you try and find something about it that you like and try different ways of experiencing it so that you might find something you like? You can try that. Repulsed is a very strong word. I was going to suggest things like maybe you just want to do the pillow princess and lay there and let him ride you and see how that works. Maybe you want to try dressing up really sexy and getting an outfit that makes you feel really sexy with the harness and the strap on. But if that really just doesn't appeal to you, then you guys need to have a sit down, because you shouldn't be doing something that repulses you in bed with the man you love. This is not cool. So, okay, what are your options then? Is he loves it? You know, I'm real clear on that one. Well, you have a number of options. He can get toys that he can use on his own. He can get a suction cup dildo. He can get a pure wand. He can get a vice from an Eros. He can get a number of things that would give him pleasure. He could even buy a fucking machine if he really wanted to. And all those would be a replacement for you fucking him. I totally get that. But at least he could have some of the same pleasure even if he didn't have that human interaction. That's one choice. Another choice is you could give him a free pass to go get fucked by a pro or by somebody else, whether it's somebody else or a pro, you know, either way. And if that's something that you could see your way through to allowing in the relationship, that way he could get what he wanted and you guys could, you would have so much less anxiety in bed with him knowing that you don't have to do that anymore, that I think that that might improve your relationship. So that if any of that is something that you think you might be able to do, you think you two might be able to navigate your way through, then consider that. It requires a huge amount of negotiation and communication to do something like this and to make sure that you both understand exactly how you feel about it and that you both retain the right to pull the plug on the whole idea if it doesn't feel right. You know, you can't just like, okay, we did this, so we commit to this forever. No, because it needs to feel okay. Just like you getting into bed with him and doing something with him needs to feel okay. It needs to feel at least neutral. You know, there are people who do things for their partners in bed that it doesn't thrill them, okay? But they do it for their partner. They do it because they know their partner loves it. So if you can do that, that's awesome. But if you are seriously on the negative side, which clearly you are in this letter, either you need to find a way to make this more appealing for you, or you need to give him a free pass, or he needs to just do it himself. So those are the only three things I can think of, and not sure which way you're going to go on this, but I wish you the best of luck. And really, communication. He needs to know how you feel about this, and he needs to know that it's important enough to where it's starting to affect you and you don't even want to get in bed with him because you have a lot of anxiety, your heart sinks, those were your words. So yeah, he needs to know this and he needs to be able to take a deep breath and say, okay, then this is something that you shouldn't be doing with me. If it's that intense for you and that repulsive, then absolutely it's not your thing. So there you go. Good luck to you, and please let us know how it goes. Here's another letter. The title on it was Afraid to Scare. Hi, Ruby. Thank you for all the amazing work you do. After fantasizing about being pegged for years, I finally asked my analphobic wife how she would feel about using a small toy on me, to which she surprisingly agreed. I bought the booty from Babeland or Babel, I can't tell which, and which is only the size of a small finger. At first, I could not get it in at all, and I feared my eyes were way bigger than my asshole, but with patience and practice, I managed to get it in and can now do so with ease. It feels good, it's not very stimulating, and it doesn't reach my prostate. I want something much bigger. I'm not sure how she would react to my asking her to fuck me with a penis-sized dildo. Any suggestions as to how to go about getting her to use A, a nice-sized toy, and B, to actually fuck me with it, not just put it in before my fucking her, as was discussed. Best wishes. Okay, let's see. I think if you're taking things really slowly, which it sounds like you are, then the next thing to do would be to get a slightly bigger toy. Not a penis-sized toy, but a slightly bigger toy. So you've got one that's really tiny. It's the size of a small finger. I think what I might do is to approach her with information and say, you know, this feels really good and I love it when you do this, but I've been doing some reading about my prostate and I don't think that this is reaching my prostate. And I want something a little bit longer and a little bit bigger around because this is like, it's almost like I can't feel that it's there. So I'd like to try that and see how that feels and let her do that with her hand holding the toy. And that would be the next step. If you're trying to take this really, really slow and have patience, that's the next step that I would take. And make sure that you get a toy that doesn't look like a penis. Make sure that you get a toy that just looks like a toy. And that way you can play with it. And if she is interested in anal, you can play with it with her too. So once you've done that, then if she's gotten pretty comfortable with that, then that would be the point that I would say, you know, this is just the most amazing thing ever, and thank you so much for doing this with me, for playing with the toy, and as you can see, I've had amazing orgasms, and hoping you will, and I would really like to try you putting this in a harness and us doing some pegging, because I want to be with you and watch you and have you move with me and explore this. And I want to kind of see what it's like to lay back and feel what you feel, you know, when I am penetrating you. I think that that would be really fun for us. What do you think? That's probably how I would approach it. And you can change those words to all kinds of different things. But as a reminder, present it to her with enthusiasm and with excitement and with a, wow, guess what we can do next with this whole concept, as opposed to being apologetic and embarrassed that you actually would like a bigger toy. It's awesome that you would like a bigger toy. You're exploring a part of your body that gives you pleasure, and it's cool that you're exploring it. So try and let go of that whole connotation of, uh-oh, she's going to freak out if I want something bigger in my ass. If she hasn't freaked out about the little thing, I think you've got some leeway there. You know, sure, I know that there are women out there that just freak out once their guys get too big, but I think there's some wiggle room that you have there. So give that a try. Let me know how it works, and good luck to you. Okay. Oh, my friend wrote in and gave me some more information for you guys for that hormonal pellet therapy. This is the person who her whole sex life turned around when she started getting the hormonal implant. And this is a new kind of hormonal therapy. It's called hormonal pellet therapy. And I didn't really know that much about it, whether it had testosterone in it or not. So she wrote me and told me this. A few weeks ago, you gave me a shout out in a podcast. You were talking about the pellet inserts I have. They are estrogen and testosterone. You weren't sure about the testosterone. Anyway, this is quickly becoming one of the best products the clinic I go to provides. Postmenopausal women are becoming happier, and their husbands remind them to get their pellet inserts. I highly recommend it. The clinic I go to is run by the Catholics, so they can't promote what they do, but they can't stop word of mouth, which is the best advertising anyway. Just wanted you to know. So yeah, if you're out there kind of battling the loss of libido, postmenopausal issues, things like that, check out the hormonal pellet therapy, because I know there's many different things to try, and this is one more to try. This is the latest. And certainly it seems to work well for my friend and a lot of other women as well. That's the cool thing, is like their husbands go, "Honey, honey, remember to get your pellet insert." Well, they have a vested interest. Of course they're reminding you. It's awesome. Thank you for writing in and letting me know that information so I could share it with everybody. Okay, so now, guess what time it is, everybody? It's pegging celebration time! My husband and I have been listening to your podcasts for a while now. One thing we noticed that has been missing is the celebration music. I'm writing to you so you have a reason to play it, as well as give a number of listeners hope that pegging can happen, even with a vanilla partner. Here's the backstory. I've known my husband for a number of years before we dated and eventually married. Sex was never a huge part of the relationship, as we had other things we wanted to focus on. Shortly after we married, and unknown to the other, we both started withdrawing from any intimate relations with each other. He because of erectile dysfunction issues, me because I didn't want to get pregnant right after marriage and felt it was cruel to bring him to the peak of coming and then denying the finish. Fast forward to a couple of years ago. After a number of years of sexless marriage, my husband had the courage to speak up that he wanted to change things. We sat down one night before bed and talked. For us, the most honest talks we have had have been in the dark bedroom while lying in bed next to each other. That was where he told me he has been having erectile issues for a while. We talked through his concerns as well as mine. We both comforted each other and reassured each other we can work through all this together. During that conversation, my husband brought up how he wanted to change the roommates with benefit option relationship we had and get back to being a married couple that has enjoyable sex together. That was when he brought up the topic of pegging. Being inexperienced in sex as I was and wanting to make things work, I was open, yet hesitant to the idea. That's when he suggested I listen to your podcast to get educated about what pegging is and what it can do for men. I did just that. I downloaded all your podcasts to my phone so I could listen and learn. The ones that weren't available for download, I listened to on the computer that night. Podcast 31 struck a chord with me, as it hit on all the concerns and fears I had about pegging, while making me not feel alone with those feelings. A couple months later, I finally stopped in at my local adult store and picked up a few items. I found a nice water-based lube, a butt plug for him, which turned out to be way too small to be of any use, and a vibrator for me, my first one ever. We picked a night that nothing was going on, had a wonderful evening out, and came home to play with each other. We tried a number of things, and I attempted to finger my husband for the first time. I did as you suggested for newbies and put on a glove and had little cotton balls in the fingertips so my nails wouldn't scratch him. We talked the entire time, and I took direction from him as to when to go deeper, stop, or withdraw. I was hoping to stimulate his prostate, but alas, my fingers seemed to be too short to do anything for him. We tried to do something a couple other times over the past couple of years, but our schedules just didn't match up. My husband picked up a Vixen Mistress, but I never used it on him. I worked up the courage a year ago to pick up my own harness. After much research, I decided on the spare parts Jacques. I was on a road trip and managed to find a store that carried them and allowed me to try it on, since I was on the between sizes according to the company's sizing info. When I got home from the road trip, I put on the harness and got it fitted to me. A little bit later, I put the mistress in it. I felt ridiculous wearing it. My husband reassured me I didn't look ridiculous. Every time I put it on, even if it was only for a few short moments, he reassured me that I looked gorgeous and that he loved me. I still couldn't get the comfortable with having a cock strapped on and would only wear it for 10 to 15 minutes, much to his chagrin. Skip ahead to the holiday weekend. We agreed that we would spend some time together over the weekend since we hadn't been doing much, and we did just that. We were home Friday and throughout the day had several heart-to-heart talks and discussed a number of fears and fantasies. Friday night we started out cuddling and kissing. He did everything to me to pleasure me. I even let him get me in the ass for the first time, as I knew it was a fantasy of his, and vaginal intercourse just wasn't happening. Side note, I will be going to talk to my doctor about my issue. After he finished pleasuring me, we took a short stretch break and I put on my harness with the mistress. It was the first time I didn't feel ridiculous wearing it. We worked to find a position that would be comfortable for him and allow me access to his ass. With towels down and lube in hand, I coated the mistress in lube. I started pressing the cock in slowly. My husband told me that one side of the mistress needed more lube, so I added more lube and even rubbed a bit more by the entry before starting again. I took it slow, stopping when needed to allow him to get used to it. Once I had the full cock in his ass and he was comfortable, I started moving it in and out. While I was getting comfortable with the hip movement, we talked about what speed and stroke felt best to him. He also commented about the pressure in his abdominal area he felt when I thrust it in, so I did shorter thrusts. Otherwise, he was enjoying what I was doing, and I was enjoying what I was doing to him. While I couldn't get him to come, it was the first time for both of us, so we were happy no one got hurt. I'm looking forward to when I get to put on my harness again and fuck my husband's ass. I know he's looking forward to that time also. I'm sorry if this pegging celebration story is a bit long. It's taken almost 2 years for this vanilla person to finally work up the ability to successfully peg my husband. We followed the advice that has been given, communicate with each other and take it slow. If you do read this on one of your podcasts, feel free to edit the story down as you see fit. My husband and I are very happy we could share this and hope it helps others know that it is possible with time and patience from both parties. Thank you for the educational work you've been doing. It has helped me and my husband get closer. Yes. That is a very sweet story. You two were persistent. That is a long period of time. I know how it is when you just go from day to day, and when I've been in relationships and they have been edging towards the sexless type of relationship, because yes, I have been in those before, it has felt almost like I'm frozen, almost like this is a topic that's just so full of not fun things to talk about that I just don't really want to go there. And those are the kinds of things that are the most important to talk about. So I really, first of all, commend your husband for having the courage way back when to come to you and say, hey, I would like this to be a good sexual relationship again. And it sounds like you two have been all over the place since then, trying things, doing different things here and there, and I understand it hasn't been a quick process, but good for you that you finally got there. Don't let too much time go by. Again, bring that harness out and surprise him when he walks in the door from work. Keep going for it. Keep that intimacy alive. Maybe let him pick what position or something. Talk about it when you go out to a restaurant. Sit there and eat the food while you're talking about how you'd like to do it next time and what turned you on the most about it and what maybe didn't work so well that you could do differently next time. Happy pegging, you two. Oh my gosh. Thank you for writing in. That was a sweet, sweet story. And here's another one for everybody. I hope your summer is going well for you. I've had a great summer of reconnecting with my wife after some troubled times about a year ago. We had a first pegging celebration the year before last, somewhere in the mid-50s of your podcast. Last summer was not a good summer for trust and intimacy with my wife. Marriage is a journey into the unknown and unexpected. This summer, with the kids away for a week, for the first time in 14 years, we escaped to the Bahamas for a week of us time. No kids, no commitments, lots of privacy and beach to do nothing but talk, open up to each other like never before, and make love. Truly a time to remember and to hold on to when we are both in the thick of work and schools, kids, etc. Oh, the pegging. Unbelievable, and better than our first time 2 years ago. This time we tried cowgirl. Cowboy. It's called cowboy when you're the guy riding her. This time we tried cowgirl, and it worked beautifully for both of us for better control. She had the Bella Jacques harness with lovely stockings and bustier, which was extremely sexy, and used the Fun Factory share, which was challenging to maneuver into the harness in a somewhat sexy way. But once it was in and she was on her back, a sight to behold, with my beautiful wife waiting for me to straddle her. The ride was intensely pleasurable for me, with her able to see and stroke me as well as get in the groove of thrusting up once I was comfortable on top. It was the longest orgasm that I have ever had, with it coming in waves and finally an ejaculation. She was way into it and loved to see me so totally gone in my pleasure. Her only complaint was the weight of me on her pelvis sometimes was a bit uncomfortable. I think a few pillows might help that next time to give her pelvis some height. We then brought her to an orgasm with some loving yoni massage and the new rechargeable magic wand with some fun attachments which sent her off to Happy Land. We can't thank you enough. Oh, this is lovely. You painted such a wonderful picture. The harness I think you meant is the Spare Parts Bella harness. Because the Bella and the Jacques are two different spare parts harnesses, but the Bella is perfectly like you described. It has the garters, which hold up stockings, and such a beautiful harness. So yeah, she looked sexy, that's for sure. And as far as like a cushion underneath her, you know, those Liberator wedges are awesome. I'm going to put that in the Linkorama for you. This was a really nice letter to get, and it was kind of like a second pecking celebration, because unbelievable and better than our first time 2 years ago. That's a long time to not do it after doing it the first time. It's hard for me to conceive of. It's hard for me to understand, but of course it is, because pegging is my passion and I do it as often as I can. So to think of not doing it for 2 years is a little inconceivable to me. But you got back to it. That's a really cool thing. And the description of how it went was lovely. So I would like to hear more stories about it happening more often from you guys. You know, perhaps it's something, you know, I shouldn't say that, because maybe this is something for you too, where it's just something you say for really, really special times. And that's fine too, if you both love it that way. Pegging and the Bahamas. That sounds like an amazing, amazing combination. Good for you two. Thank you so much for writing this story in. Okay, we're going to leave it there. We're going to leave it there with a smile on my face. Can you hear it in my words? I got the smile on my face. Yes. Okay, let's see. There are links on my blog for you to follow me on Twitter, on Facebook. You can also subscribe to my blog there, and there's a link to subscribe to me on iTunes. My podcast is also available through various podcast downloader apps, or it can be streamed directly from my blog, peggingparadise.com. If you use the iTunes and rate my podcast or write me a review, it would be totally freaking awesome. You can call me at 805-500-6544 with all of your questions, comments, stories, successes, adventures, fears, and wonderings, or you can write those words down and send them to ruby@peggingparadise.com. Thank you very much for downloading and listening. You're all the best. Happy pegging!